How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. As always, tons of stuff to talk about. It is a pay-per-view weekend. TNA Turning Point takes place tonight from Orlando. We're going to talk about all of the matches, do a preview of the show. It goes on the air moments after we go off the air here today, so make sure you check out that pay-per-view. And if you're not into it, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com. We'll be doing live running play-by-play. And quite honestly, when you look at the lineup for the show, and when we talk about Impact from this past Thursday night, where they did not announce the main event until Reaction, not thinking that a lot of people are going to buy this show. But I've been wrong before. Maybe I'll be wrong this time. We'll talk about it here in just a moment. Plus that Impact show and all of the other major TV shows of the week, including Raw from this past Monday night, which is the build to the Survivor Series pay-per-view, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. We'll talk a little bit about Survivor Series as well, talk about some of the matches that we know announced for that card thus far. And we're going to talk about next weekend, which is a dual show weekend in the sense that there are two Zuffa shows in a three-day period. On Thursday night, it is WEC Faber versus Mizugaki. One of the final WEC shows of all time, second to last, and Uriah Faber making his 135-pound debut. We're going to talk about that show, and this coming Saturday, there is a second major UFC show. That is UFC from Germany. We'll give you the lineup for that show, talk about some of the big matches there, and some other stuff as well. So UFC and WWE news today. Talk about the death of Edouard Carpentier. I've seen the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view from next Friday night on traditional pay-per-view. I'll give you a quick review of that show. Talk about Ultimate Fighter, the WWE earnings report. Mr. Anderson has said that TNA has banned chair shots. We're going to talk about that. I got a lot to say. Also be talking about the Linda McMahon Senate run. She did, in fact, lose. And as we were getting ready to do this show and looking at all the latest news and trying to figure out what to talk about, we actually had forgotten that story because it is already pretty much a non-story, which is astounding when you really think about it. So we're going to talk all about that and a lot more coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, when we were running down all of the news from the past week that we were going to talk about on this program, I made mention that the Linda McMahon campaign was already yesterday's news, already a non-story. I probably was a little harsh. I can't say it's a non-story, but now that she's lost, I mean, I haven't heard anybody talking about it for days. Now, that's not to say that nothing is going to become of it. I mean, it was a really big story. I mean, she spent almost $50 million on this Senate run. The company, a lot of dirty laundry was aired. There are ongoing investigations into WWE's classification of its wrestlers as independent contractors. There could be more to come. But I will say that since Tuesday, this has died down to such a degree that I really will be very, very surprised if anything actually comes of this. And really going into this, I was not like Linda McMahon, where she was apparently so naive, as was Vince McMahon, that they thought, if we run for Senate, none of this stuff is going to come up. They apparently really thought that. And of course, all of this stuff did come up. And, you know, going in, I knew a lot of this stuff would come up. But I also felt, when this is all over, nothing's going to change. And there were a lot of people that felt, you know what? Stuff is going to change. It's almost inevitable. I mean, all this stuff is going to be dug up, and people are going to do investigations and this and that, and things are going to change. And there was a period there where I thought, you know, maybe something, especially when the investigation began into the independent contractors. And as I said, something still could come of that. But really, since Tuesday, it's been so quiet that as of today, I really believe that nothing is going to come of it. Like, they brought out all the big guns. They made a big deal out of a lot of different things, some of which they should have made a big deal out of and some of which they probably should not have. But in the end, Blumenthal won, and it's almost like now everybody's just moving on. And Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I was very, very surprised that nothing more was made out of, you know, bigger story. You have the independent contractor and issue and some other things, because I thought, you know, if there was ever going to be a time, I mean, you know, short of Vince McMahon wanting to run for president, you know, this was going to be the most high-profile stage they were going to be on, and I could have, you know, really thought they were going to take more hits than they did as far as, you know, being a publicly traded company and having some of the issues that they do and some of the, you know, the head-scratching things that happen. It's a surprise that nothing more was made of it, but the Connecticut governor's race has actually been a more of a national story coming out of it. So realistically, the whole thing really did end with a, you know, not even a thud, just kind of went away, and it's amazing. $160 million, I think, the woman spent in California, $50 million that Linda McMahon spent on this, and yeah, Vince poked fun at it on Monday in his own special way, but, you know, $50 million is a lot of money to basically, in a way, this is worse, to go away this quietly. Now, the Stanford newspaper was actually very nice to Linda on Tuesday, even though they endorsed Blumenthal. They were quite nice to her, and obviously WWE is based there, and they, you know, have always hyped up the fact that the amount of jobs and things like that that the WWE has created up there. But, you know, outside of that little bit of good press, and, you know, she ended up being far more engaging than people thought she was, and was able to be pretty good with the media, and will go away with this, I think, with people thinking a little bit higher of her. Again, $50 million was a lot of money to spend on something that ended so quietly.
You know, I don't want to talk about politics too much on this show, unless it does relate to professional wrestling, but I will say that it is kind of interesting, actually, that Meg Whitman and Linda McMahon both spent ridiculous amounts of money, I guess, quite frankly, trying to buy their way in office, and it didn't work. So I just thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, both of those things, $50 million is a lot of money. And what's kind of scary about the whole thing is that there is a little bit of talk, a lot of talk. I'm just, again, really surprised at how quiet it is. I guess I shouldn't be, because, I mean, you know, everything was set to peak on Monday and Tuesday heading into the election, but man, it's been quiet since then. But there has been a little bit of talk of Linda possibly running again. And when you think of a lot of the failed attempts to, I guess, buy their way into the mainstream, whether it be football leagues or concert promotions or bodybuilding federations or Senate Connecticut races or Connecticut Senate races, I mean, this was an expensive one. I mean, this was second only to the XFL in terms of the amount of money that the McMahons have lost on, you know, a project of this sort, an outside wrestling project. And the idea of her running again and them spending another $50 million, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I've asked a question many times, and you know, obviously the number one question is why. And the number one answer seems to be that, well, she would have power and she would be able to afford some semblance of protection and such, an umbrella over WWE, which may very well be the case. But I just look at $50 million. Like, the things that could be done with $15 million. You know what I mean? The stuff that you could do for your company or for your employees or just for the world in general, if you really want to do that. I mean, $50 million just down the drain, and the idea of them spending even more to try this again is like, I don't know. Especially, again, I don't want to get too far into politics, but the story of this election was people upset at the Democrats, and she was running as a Republican, and she still got beat. I mean, this is, I don't know. The idea of running again, to me, is just, like, not a good idea.
Well, yeah, I don't know. And they hammer the politics. Well, the one reason she shouldn't run again is the fact that, you know, again, with the position they're in, with things sliding downwards, you know, financially anyway, it's not like the empire is going to crumble or anything like that. But, you know, they're not raking in money like they were. They're not kicking out a dividend like they were. So, you know, to run against Joe Lieberman, which would come up in 2 years, I mean, you just spend 50. He's got a war chest as it is and is, you know, big nationally and can get a lot of national money. You know, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to do it that way anyway. And then on top of it, and just, you know, again, $50 million of their money spent, and like you said, make Whitman and a lot of other people. One of the things a lot of people, including Linda McMahon, ran on was we need to create jobs. Well, how about taking some of that $50 million and creating more jobs? Or, you
well,
know,
it's part of the problem
is somebody.
She spent $50 million, and meanwhile, they were cutting 10% of their workforce. So, bad timing.
Yeah, oops. But, maybe that's why they brought Val Venus back. She can work on some of her libertarian things and maybe latch on to the Tea Party or something like that.
Well, it was interesting. The final Raw before the election, there was a Vince McMahon wacky skit, which was very wacky. And it was actually pretty damn funny, to be quite honest with you.
That's true.
I mean, when I watched it, I mean, to me, it was like the stages of death. Where you're angry and there's denial and this and that, and finally the final stage is acceptance. And to me, that was where Vince McMahon was in this skit. I mean, they even had Freddie Prinze Jr., who was playing the doctor, pretty much say when Vince, I can't remember what it was. There was a line where he said something like she tried to become senator or something like that. I mean, it was in the past tense, like the race had already been lost. And I just heard it and I thought, wow, well, there you go. He's accepted this failure and now he's going to poke fun at it. And the big question, which I hadn't really thought about since everything kind of got so quiet, was what the hell's going to happen on Raw on Monday? He could go nuts. Maybe he won't. I mean, maybe he is past acceptance. It'll just be business as usual. But, you know, going in, I thought Monday is going to be a fascinating show.
Yeah, and I haven't seen SmackDown yet. I'm surprised they didn't do anything there, although, I'm sure they'd probably save it all up for Raw. But, yeah, I can see some obviously, we've talked about some of the characters that could be created out of this if he decides to be extra pissy, which he could very well be. It seems to be in his nature occasionally. It could be something mind-blowing on Raw as far as the seeing Vince being angry on TV for, showing his ass for the world, literally.
We're going to head to a break here in just a moment. That's enough talking about Linda here. Maybe we'll do more later. I mean, there's always stuff to talk about regarding it. But we need to get into the TNA pay-per-view preview. Now that, everybody, is news. The Turning Point show, God knows, they need people buying this show. So we're going to talk about it, tell you why you should buy it, or maybe why you shouldn't buy it. It's coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Before we get into the TNA pay-per-view preview here, I do want to make one comment. I wrote an article several weeks ago for Figure Four Weekly talking about the TNA ratings trend, which is downwards since their latest big angle, and the fact that nothing seems to change this and that, calling for the booking team to be replaced, nothing major. And you can read that right now for free at WrestlingObserver.com. It should be on the front page. If it's dropped off the front page, then if you scroll down to the full news, radio, and column archive at the bottom of the center column, click on that, and it's called Brian Alvarez on TNA Ratings Patterns and Why the Creative Team Must Be Replaced. And I suggest everybody read it. And especially those of you that are upset with me about the things that I say about TNA on a weekly basis. And I want to make one comment about this because I got a lot of emails after this column. And I would say that 70 to 80% of them were positive. Thought it was a great column. Thought that I made a lot of good points, which if I do say so myself, I did. But there were a percentage of people that were very upset, which of course I was prepared for, because whenever you write about TNA, TNA has the most hardcore fans, the most loyal, passionate fans in the world. And no matter how bad the show is, no matter what they do, these people are going to love this show. And I just want to say that if you love TNA, I'm very happy for you. And God knows they need as many people to love that promotion as they can. But if you're response to my statements about TNA is to tell me that, well, WWE also sucks. That's not really a valid excuse to me. Because, number one, I'm well aware that WWE has problems. In fact, the cover story of Figure Four Weekly this week is WWE Buy Rate Analysis 2007 to 2010. And myself and Chris Harrington went in and, I mean, Chris Harrington, as far as stats and analysis of these things, is like phenomenal. And WWE buy rates in the past 3 years have collapsed. It is a calamity, the degree of which they have collapsed. And I wrote all about it in this cover story. So I don't want people saying that I only point out the bad things in TNA and I never point out the negatives in WWE. I do this. I point out plenty of negatives in WWE. But even if I didn't, I don't understand why it's okay for TNA to have problems because WWE also has problems. There should not be any sort of comparison here. Like, yes, I understand that things are also bad for WWE, but what does that have to do with TNA? I don't understand why people have to accept that TNA is poor because WWE also is poor. One should have nothing to do with the other. I mean, if WWE was doing great and TNA was doing great, that's fine. But if one is doing horribly, then I should not be, you know, disallowed from talking about how poorly the other one is doing just because the other one is also doing bad. It's two completely different things. I'm talking right now about the problems that TNA has, and at another time, probably come Survivor Series, in fact, I will talk about the problems that WWE has. So I just found that interesting that instead of pointing out things that I was perhaps incorrect about or that they disagreed with, they merely said, well, WWE also sucks. Great! That has absolutely nothing to do with anything that I'm talking about with TNA. So, with that said, let's talk about the Turning Point show here.
Wait, hold on. In eight years, when it's not like WWE has been flying high since TNA has been in existence, they've had some down times and some bad times. They've ricocheted up and down. How many times did TNA strike while the iron was hot when WWE was in a down spell? You know, to make a defense or to try to say, well, wrestling sucks right now, or WWE sucks right now, and as one of the ways to make an excuse for TNA, wrong. If you're that upset about what you had written, which was, you know, it was great and it was on point, if they're that upset about that, how about instead of, you know, the first thing they should do if they're that diehard is try to convince some of the other million people that seem to watch TNA consistently every week, try to get more than 20,000 of them or whatever the number is to order the pay-per-view. It's not like what you said isn't the truth. It has bore itself out from over the years, and that's why it's so painful to talk about, because of all the talent that's there. We're going to list a bunch of names that are going to appear on this pay-per-view, and what have they done to help their cause? It's been 8 years. They have to prove it to everybody else. And people complain about, well, the dirt sheets, and they whine and complain about it. Realistically, they should be happy we're paying attention to it, because you know what? Doesn't seem to be anybody else has.
The other thing that kind of interested me was I thought that I was, like, really fair in this article. Like, I thought I went out of my way to be as fair as possible here. And, in fact, I almost thought that, like, some people didn't even read it when they wrote feedback to me, which, you know, I mean, it's happened many times. In fact, there was one person on our board who wrote feedback, and they were very upset, and they actually started out by writing, "I did not read it." And I was like, well, what compelled you to write to me after not reading what I wrote about it? And in this article, I mean, if I can find the exact thing right here, I will read it to everybody. But, I mean, I flat out said that the best house show that I've ever been to in my life was a TNA house show. Like, the best one that I've ever been to. I mean, I've been to WWE shows. I've been to WrestleManias. I've been to house shows from Ring of Honor, all sorts of different companies. And the best house show that I've ever been to was a TNA show. And I don't know how you could read that and then write to me that I am biased and hate TNA and think that TNA should die. It amazes me. But spending too much time on this, let's talk about the Turning Point pay-per-view. This show, it is not mean or unfair for me to say that nobody is buying this show, because they're just not. The main event of the show is Jeff Hardy and Matt Morgan for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. On Impact this past Thursday night, this match was not announced during Impact. This match was announced during Reaction after Impact went off the air. Now, there have been a lot of bad builds for pay-per-views back in the day, but I don't know if I can ever remember a pay-per-view where the main event was not even officially announced on the go-home show. It was announced after the go-home show was over on the bonus program, which usually does about 800,000 viewers, when Impact usually does about 1.7 million. So that's new to me, but I guess it really doesn't matter, because whether they announce Matt Morgan and Jeff Hardy or not, I don't think anybody's buying the show to see that match. It is going to be a battle in the sense that I can remember one really great main event that Matt Morgan has had, and it was with Kurt Angle. Jeff Hardy is not Kurt Angle, and whether Jeff Hardy can get a main event match out of Matt Morgan, I don't know, but my guess would be probably not.
No, it's going to be a clash of styles, and not in a good way, I wouldn't think. And, you know, I understand what they were trying to do, I guess, by, you know, trying to make people watch reaction and hold on. And I don't know. I guess that's what it was. And again, like you said, it's not like this is going to be the true selling point of the show or anything like that. But, yeah, it didn't end up going well. I didn't think that was really a good idea. But, you know, Hardy wins. Morgan screwed out of it somehow. But, yeah, I just wonder how long it's going to go and if Morgan's just going to be a launching pad or not, because it's not a clash of styles I'm really looking forward to.
I'm a little worried that it's so obvious that Jeff Hardy is going to win that they're going to do some sort of swerve and put the title on Matt Morgan, which would make, like, absolutely no sense whatsoever. But I guess we shall see. Or some sort of deal where, I don't know, Matt Morgan ends up back with Fortune again or something like that, some sort of weird swerve. But that is the main event of the show. The semi-main is the Motor City Machine Guns versus Team 3D for the TNA tag titles, where Team 3D is going to retire afterwards. Supposedly win, lose, or draw, they are retiring. And if they win, they retire as champions for the 24th time. And if they lose, then Machine Guns can announce that they were the team that retired Team 3D. Now, why you bother doing a retirement stipulation when everybody on the earth knows full well that they're not going to retire, I don't know. Dave probably put it best when he said they just can't help themselves. So anyway, nobody's retiring here. So if you're going to buy the show to see the final match of Team 3D, don't bother. They're not retiring. What are your thoughts on this match?
And see, I could take it as them retiring too, because I could see them winning the belts and retiring with them, since that seems to be a big deal to them, since they never dropped any of their titles. Even the Hustle title, for Christ's sakes, they didn't even drop when they were in Japan. So I don't know. Especially the way they did the angle on Thursday night too, where it was that was something you have with two teams after, and the Dudleys get jumped by somebody and get beat up on their way out of their retirement, and that sets up the next feud for the Machine Guns. You know, they were very cordial to each other and very sporting like. But then again, with that said too, it was just like, okay, why do I want to see this? You know, I can wait till Thursday and see what the angle is going to be.
When they did the face-to-face on Impact, I mean, to me, and when I first watched it, my brain said, and I quote in the words of Michael Cole, so obviously Team 3D is turning on the Machine Guns. That was what my brain said. But then, like, the deep in my brain, the Vince Russo part of my brain thought, well, if that's what's most likely to happen, then clearly the Machine Guns are going to turn on Team 3D, and the Machine Guns will turn heel. Which, of course, makes absolutely no sense, but that's now what I presume is most likely going to happen. And by the way, I want to mention something here. Again, people are going to be upset about me burying TNA, so maybe you should just, I guess, tune out for about 20 minutes. But Jeff Hardy's heel turn. Eric Bischoff, on a recent interview, flat out said that the idea of the Jeff Hardy heel turn was an idea that was Vince Russo's. Vince Russo came up with this idea. And Bischoff said, I needed a lot of convincing. And why not? Because the idea of turning Jeff Hardy heel is stupid. So after a lot of convincing, Bischoff was finally convinced that it's just like when Hulk Hogan turned heel in 1996. So let's do it again. Now, never mind the fact that this was 1996. That's your segue into the next segment, because I'm going to pick this up after the break. That was your teaser. That was your cliffhanger. I'm up against a break. I'll be right back, and I'll talk about why this is so wacky. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And you, the listener, sitting with bated breath, waiting for me to tell you why Jeff Hardy as a heel is such a stupid idea. As if every single one of you listening doesn't already know. Unless you're Vince Russo, in which case you probably don't know. But I'm going to tell you right now. So as I was saying before the break, Eric Bischoff did an interview, and he flat out said, Vince Russo had this idea of turning Jeff Hardy heel. And he said, I needed a lot of convincing. But eventually he was convinced, because apparently Russo was like, well, it'll be just like Hulk Hogan turning heel in 1996. Look at how that turned around WCW. The NWO was so huge. It'll be just like that. And Bischoff, having absolutely no idea what he's doing, went along with it. Now, here are the differences. Now, granted, nobody in TNA is much of a draw. But if one person in TNA is a draw, that person is Jeff Hardy. When Jeff Hardy went to TNA, there was a noticeable increase in house show business. They sold a ton of Jeff Hardy merchandise. Jeff Hardy moved the ratings for a little while. Not for long, but a little while. So Jeff Hardy was a guy, particularly on the house shows, that people paid to see. Now, for those of you that are too young to remember 1996, Hulk Hogan was not the red and yellow 1980s biggest babyface in the world, Hulk Hogan, when he suddenly, shockingly turned heel. Oh, no. Hulk Hogan, by this time, was already being booed by a sizable portion of the audience. The people were already turned off to Hulk Hogan. He was already getting a backlash. So what happened was, they went with it. Hulk Hogan was at the point where his time of drawing big numbers as a babyface and big merchandise numbers and pay-per-view and that sort of thing, it was on the tail end of that. It was on a downswing. And so they decided, okay, well, you know, what the hell? Let's turn this guy heel. And they did, and it reignited WCW's business. But the point is, he was already being booed. There was already a backlash to Hulk Hogan when they turned him. Such was not the case with Jeff Hardy. And since the Jeff Hardy heel turn, in the last week, let me tell you about TNA business. Did a couple of shows last week that did very poor numbers. One of them, I believe, did 300 fans. 300 fans. This is a promotion with national television. This is a program with primetime national television. Primetime national television on Spike TV, where upwards of 1.5 million viewers watch this show every week. And they ran a live event. And granted, as I mentioned myself, the best live event I ever went to was a TNA house show. They did this live event and drew 300 people with Jeff Hardy on top. Because you see, nobody wants to pay to see a heel Jeff Hardy. Not only did they draw 300 fans, but in the last week, they have canceled two house shows. Because you see, nobody wants to pay to see a heel Jeff Hardy. Now, to me, this should have been obvious going in. I mean, I did not see people clamoring for a Jeff Hardy heel turn. I did not see people thinking this was going to be a great idea. I think that when it happened, I mean, I was at least fair. As much as people say that I'm biased against TNA, I mean, when the pay-per-view was over, I flat out said, let's see how it goes. I don't think it was a good idea, but you know what? Let's see how it goes. Well, we've seen how it went. Poorly. So anyway, the idea of the Motor City Machine Guns, this is the point I'm trying to make. The idea of the Motor City Machine Guns turning heel, I really hope they don't do that, because that is a terrible idea. These are two guys where if you listen to interviews that people do in TNA, like the actual TNA wrestlers, and if you talk to other people, that office people, and even people that are outside of TNA that are in the business, they all talk about how great the Motor City Machine Guns are, how underutilized they are, how perfect they are for this generation of wrestling fan. They're young guys. They have great matches. They're high flyers. They're in shape. They love video games. I mean, they're perfect babyface wrestlers for this generation. They should be pushed so much harder than they are. And if the idea is to turn them heel, then this place has lost it. Again.
This is the same company that brought Alex Shelley in as Baby Bear to Abyss and Goldilocks. So, you know, and you know, the progression since then has not been all that great. And again, this is not going to be, you know, again, not going to be the funnest match in the world for me. Hopefully it ends up being really good. I just think it's as simple as the Dudleys are going to turn on the stipulation come next Thursday. I don't think it's going to be too dramatic or anything like that. I could actually see it, you know, ending in handshakes, you know, or something like that. But obviously, I don't think the Dudleys are going anywhere. So I just think they're going to turn on the stipulation somehow. But, you know, again, I don't know what comes next. Do we get Dudleys and the Young Bucks or what?
Speaking of Abyss, he is facing D'Angelo De Niro in a lumberjack match. Now, let me explain this to everybody who doesn't watch Impact. They are doing a storyline where Abyss goes over the rail and attacks fans. Now, back in the day, the deal was, if you're a wrestler and a fan comes over the rail and gets in the ring, you can beat him up because it's self-defense. Like, a man is actually trying to attack you, or in some cases, a woman. A human being is coming over the rail and getting into the ring, and once that happens, you have the right to beat the crap out of them because you're protecting yourself. But if you as a wrestler go over the rail into the crowd and you attack someone, then be prepared for a lawsuit. So, of course, in TNA, Abyss is now going over the guardrail into the crowd and randomly beating up so-called fans. Now, first off, as stupid as this is, the best part is I've watched a lot of Abdullah the Butcher footage back in the day. In fact, I've interviewed Abdullah the Butcher, which you can check out at WrestlingObserverShoots.com. But I've seen Abdullah the Butcher footage where he goes into the crowd in like Japan or Puerto Rico and people run for their lives. It is like Godzilla has gone into the crowd. These people run at top speed, screaming away from him. Not in the Impact Zone. Oh, no. Abyss goes over the guardrail, and the fans not only stand there and laugh, but sometimes they pat him on the back as he's beating up plants. So, first off, this just makes your show look like a clown show when the fans aren't scared at all of the guy that's supposedly beating them up. So, anyway, not only that, but he's beating up fans and, you know, of course there's no lawsuit. He's beating up innocent fans. But anyway, the big match now is that Pope, who is supposed to be a babyface, has signed this match where he is going to face Abyss in a match where they surround the ring with fans. This crazed madman is attacking fans unprovoked. So the idea is, hey, let's put fans around the ring. It's the stupidest stipulation I've ever heard.
Can they at least give him, like, I don't know, leather straps so it could be like country whipping matches or something like that? I mean, why would you not arm the fans with weapons considering, you know, Abyss is going through and beating them up and threatening them with the, you know, whatever the names of the two weapons
are? What are the Lumberjacks going to use? They have done a country whipping match before with Jeff Jarrett, I believe. But these fans, I mean, I don't even know if they have weapons. Are they going to give them boards covered in nails? What are they just going to give them their fists to pound upon Abyss when he goes out of the ring? What are they going to do here? This actually makes me want to buy the pay-per-view, to be honest with you. This I have to see.
Will the security be there to break them up? Which, by the way, is another rehash of, remember when, who was the red shirt security?
Oh, I don't know. They've always got random security dorks.
Well, that's, yeah, it's, you know,
Gunner and
Colorado kid like they did in WCW2. He can get beat up by security or be a member of security, too.
What'll hopefully be a good match is Jay Lethal and Robbie E for the X Division title.
Which they have hyped up how by having Jay Lethal, them running the commercials for Jay Lethal at home in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and you get to see more of it on the reaction show. I've been fine with that, but they have done the what could be a, could be, you know, a night stealer. You know, they just don't hype it up well at all. It just, that's another one that drove me nuts. Where's JWoww for this?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe she'll do an unadvertised run-in.
Sure, that would be worth another $15,000.
Wouldn't that be awesome if they did that? They'd lose money anyway, so never mind. EV2 and Fortune in, I guess, just a match. I don't know how many people are on each team. I presume four, maybe five. I don't know. But the winning team supposedly gets the right to fire a member of the losing team. But I'm not sure because they've only mentioned that if EV2 loses, somebody gets fired. They haven't mentioned that with Fortune yet, but I presume that those are the steps. All I know is that Sabu apparently was told he would not be used after the pay-per-view, and he was so angry that I guess he told one of his representatives, and the representative got the word out all over the place. So anyway, that's something else. But I guess most likely EV2 loses and Sabu gets... well, they didn't mention he'd get fired or he'd have to retire. He's just going to be sent home.
Maybe this could be some sort of swerve where Douglas Williams, loses and gets kicked out of Fortune.
No, I'd cry. They cannot get rid of Douglas Williams.
I would hope not, but I could see them doing something that stupid. I mean, look, not that I want to bash TNA, but you sit there and you watch it in the last couple weeks leading up, and it's like, well, okay. With some badly, Rhino missing the spear in the locker room on AJ Styles and very slowly running into RVD. I mean, this is a match to figure out who the mole is, why not just wait till Thursday?
Mickie James and Tara, they brought in Mickie James so she could have WWE matches with another former WWE girl, I guess, and... probably not very long. I am not entirely sure what the point of the match is, but hopefully it'll be all right.
Well, and if they're actually on, and that could actually be one of the better matches of the night. If they're actually on and clicking, that could actually be a pleasure of the night. That's what I'm hoping, at least.
Also on the show, we've got the Tommy Dreamer Rob Van Dam match, which is two members of EV2 wrestling each other. I don't know. It's just like Rob Van Dam is sure that somebody in EV2 is out to get him or something like that. I'm not entirely sure. And the storyline was that Tommy Dreamer is so mad at him for being paranoid that one of his friends is out to get him that he challenged him to a fight. What? So yes, they're wrestling each other on the show tonight.
Even though RVD keeps, accidentally, is it supposed to be getting smacked around by Sabu or Rhino or a member of his own team, I can't believe that he would be, thinking that something could be up.
And finally, Samoa Joe and Jeff Jarrett in a match.
The real reason TNA can never go away from me, because Samoa Joe in WWE probably wouldn't work. Now, he would work fine there, but what they would do with him, I don't know, but in a way... Joe is maximizing his dollars being in TNA, which is the one reason right there I want TNA to succeed, because I want dudes to make money, and he is. Now, with that said, I don't know how he and Jeff Jarrett, Joe comes out from underneath the ramp this week and attacks Jarrett and puts a beating on him. This is a week after he got thrown off the stage. I mean, why do you have to kind of go 50-50 into this? I mean, just have... I don't know. You could have had Jarrett beat him down again. You could have had no contact. You could have had something like that. But I guess it was better than what they could have done leading into it. But I don't know. Hopefully this is going to be a really good match. Jarrett can work. Obviously Samoa Joe can too. So hopefully they do something more again with Joe after this as well.
We're going to be back in just a moment. We'll do a final preview here and then get on with some other news. Phone calls and emails as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates, free radio shows. If you love this show but want more, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a list of our latest three free radio shows. If you like what you hear, consider signing up. It's only $10.99 for all of the bonus content. And by bonus content, we mean two newsletters minimum every week, usually three, often four. The Wrestling Observer newsletter, put out by Dave Meltzer since 1983. Figure Four Weekly, put out by myself since 1995. Plus a full archive, including observers from 1991, 1992, 1993, and every observer since 2008, every Figure Four since probably 2001, with about 30 exceptions. And also radio shows. We do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. If this is the only one you hear every week, you're missing 19. They're all up on the website right now. A number of different topics. We interview some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, including this past week, we interviewed Bruno Sammartino, our favorite guest in the history of the show. He's been on several times. He is awesome. So his show is up. And not only do you get access to all of the new shows we do every week, but you get full access to every show we have ever done. Yes, your $10.99 gets you access to every show we have ever done, thousands and thousands of shows dating back to 2005, tens of thousands of hours of audio. It's all up there. And as soon as this show goes off the air, Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view. If you decide you're not going to get that show, you can read Dave's ongoing play-by-play. And then, later on in the evening, Dave and I are going to be doing a brand new radio show, just like the one you're listening to right now, except without commercials. Running down all of the matches on the show in detail, we'll talk backstage news, we'll preview Raw, and we do those at least 3 to 4 times per week. So, it's all up at WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. We're going to be back here after the top of the hour break with another hour of free pro wrestling and MMA radio, taking your phone calls and emails, talking all of the news, coming up here in just a second. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent hour one talking about TNA, the Turning Point pay-per-view, its various problems, and Linda McMahon's failure in her bid for the Senate seat in Connecticut. And this hour, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, and I wanted to make sure we mentioned the awesome program that is Ultimate Fighter. This past episode was so fantastically great. In fact, so great, we're not going to have time to talk about it here. So this is actually going to be a teaser for the next segment. But if you've not been watching this show, I'm one of those people who, I'd say probably about the 7th, 8th season, I thought that Ultimate Fighter was kind of getting a little bit stale. I thought, you know, been there, done that. I've seen this. It's a bunch of geeks in a house. They get in fights with each other. They fall in the pool. They do stupid stuff. They get drunk. I've seen this before. I'm over it. And then the Kimbo season came around, and obviously that was something different because you had Kimbo Slice there, but then it was kind of back to normal for the next season. And Josh Koscheck and George St. Pierre, I knew would be pretty good, but I had no idea that this show could possibly have been as great as it was this season. This has really been one of the best seasons in a long time. And really, in terms of ratings, this is the best the show has done since the Kimbo season. And if you throw the Kimbo season out, it's still probably the best the show has done in a long time. It has been doing very, very good ratings because the dynamic of George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck is out of this world. And as I've mentioned before on this program, they're going to be fighting in Montreal in early December. And I firmly believe, at least at this point, and I'll have a better idea once go-home week hits, but I firmly believe that this show is going to probably do a better buy rate than the Cain Velasquez-Brock Lesnar pay-per-view from about a week ago. So if you've not been watching this show, you must. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about it. We'll get Mike's thoughts on the show, and we will tell you why Josh Koscheck is the best heel in the history, perhaps, of the universe. It's coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking about Josh Koscheck, the best heel who has ever walked the earth. This week's show, it actually started with last week's show, when Koscheck started to bully the medic, who he called a male nurse. And they went back and forth for a while, and there was a funny little moment, and Koscheck was just being such a jerk, calling him a male nurse. And it came to a head this week. It started out with them messing around with each other and Koscheck trying to break into his locker room with a toilet plunger. But then, when they came to do the weigh-ins for the first fight, they both sat down and they started jaw-jacking at each other. And the medic ended up making fun of Koscheck this time for faking a knee. If you recall, can't remember what the fight was, but Koscheck sold it like he'd been hit in the eye with a knee. And they showed a replay. It didn't look like the knee came close. And Koscheck was like booed out of the building. It was awesome. But so anyway, the medic is talking about this, and Koscheck's like, I'll knock you out right now. And they keep going back and forth, and Koscheck finally goes after him. And they have to be pulled apart, and there's this drama. And then they cut to a shot of Koscheck where he's blaming it all on George St. Pierre. He says, George St. Pierre didn't want to talk trash about me, so he brought in this male nurse to do his talking for him. I can't believe George did this. It's all his fault, blah, blah, blah. It's like, this guy is just the best heel of all time. When he goes to Canada, when he goes to Montreal for this fight, it is going to be the most amazing atmosphere for any fight, probably in years and maybe of all time. He's the best.
It's absolutely amazing how, now obviously these are real guys, and you know they are being themselves, but their awareness of their surroundings and their awareness and the way the UFC has edited the, you know, this thing too, with Koscheck, after everything, not only is he coming across as a complete and utter douchebag, he's just coming across as the ultimate old pro wrestling heel. You know, I saw you pull the hair. I never pulled the hair. You have a handful of his hair right now. I didn't do that. He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. And the way the UFC, I mean, what is the guy's name? I forget the guy for what his name was, but when they brought it, Tate, that's what it was. When they brought his name up, it said underneath it, medic, you know, on top of it, which just, you know, added to, you know, the ridiculousness of it too. But Koscheck is just, he is being himself, but when it comes to those little confessional things, I mean, which are, I'm not sure how many are done after the fact or anything like that, but even if, you can't coach somebody, you can give him cue cards, but it would just sound too fake. He's just too good. He's absolutely too good, and the mind games that GSP has played since the very first episode, you know, revealing who his first pick was going to be so Koscheck would pick him, and there was a little of this at the end of the show when they were trying to figure out who was going to be fighting who, and Koscheck, and just the way they have this thing filmed, the way it's been edited up, and just the natural abilities of GSP and Koscheck have just been phenomenal.
It really is one of the best seasons ever, and I can't remember where I read this or who wrote this to me, but somebody said that this show was so stupid because they were spending all of this time building up a fight between the medic and Josh Koscheck, which was never going to take place. And here's the deal. The whole purpose of this deal with the medic, which is not scripted, but by God, if somebody could have scripted this in wrestling, it would have been huge. The whole deal is not that you want to see Josh Koscheck versus the medic. I mean, maybe you want to see the medic take a swing at him, but I mean, regardless of all that has gone on between these two men, I mean, do you really want to see the medic in the cage with Josh Koscheck? Of course not. The medic deal, this is like Bully Beatdown. For those of you that have not seen Bully Beatdown, it is a show where they find a guy who's being bullied, and they interview him about the bully, and then they interview the bully, and then Jason Mayhem Miller comes along, who's a fighter for Strikeforce, and he proceeds to challenge the bully. Let's see how tough you are. I'm going to put you in the ring with headgear or whatever with one of my MMA fighters, and if you survive, you win $10,000 or whatever. The idea is not that you want to see the bully against the guy who is being bullied. The idea is there is a bully. He is picking on someone who is not his own size, and so you're bringing in someone who is his own size to destroy him. That is the whole dynamic here. It is not about wanting to see the medic against Josh Koscheck. The idea is Josh Koscheck is a complete jerk, and he is bullying the medic, and so you're going to pay to see George St. Pierre get in there and give this guy a bully beatdown. That's what this whole thing is about, and it's awesome.
Well, and to put it in more pro wrestling terms, since the show, whether intentional, unintentional, or a mix of both, is, you know, better than pro wrestling, Jay Strongbow and Dominic DiNucci and guys like that for years had a career of being the one to set up and get pushed around and get beat up by Bruno's next opponent or by Bob Backlund's next opponent. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this was, too. Kate, and then also another guy on the red team that Koscheck had stuck his arm up and when he was trying to break up the fight and got into it with him. And just very simply, that's the way that one went, too, of, okay, Koscheck being a D-bag to these two guys, too, and it just makes you want to see GSP beat him up some more.
Let's talk a little bit about the upcoming shows. This coming Thursday, it's WEC. Uriah Faber and Takeya Mizugaki is the main event. Uriah Faber, cutting to 135 pounds, is near his college wrestling weight for the first time in his MMA career. And what are your thoughts on that fight?
I actually like this fight for Faber. It should be, you know, Mizugaki gets into some... You know, he's had some exciting fights. He's had a couple of fight of the nights. You know, the Jorgensen fight was really good, even though he lost that by decision. And, you know, had a pretty good fight with Torres, too, from what I remember, a couple of years ago. But I think Faber's just going to be able, I don't think he's going to knock him out. He could submit him late, but I can see it going to a decision with Faber winning it cleanly and clearly.
That is, of course, the main event on the show. And it's actually a packed show, as all of these WECs are. We've talked about this in recent weeks, the merger of UFC and WEC, and how it's largely a great thing for everybody involved, except for us fans who will no longer get to see WEC standalone events after the final show coming up in December. But Uriah Faber and Mizugaki is the main event. Chad Mendez faces Javier Vasquez. Eric Koch faces Francisco Rivera. Joseph Benavidez faces Wagner Fabiano, and Damasio Page faces Demetrius Johnson, and a bunch of great fights on the undercard as well. Hopefully, if there's time, they will air some of these, but anything in particular you're really looking forward to on this show?
Well, yeah, I just implore everyone to watch the damn show. just because there's only two of them left, they're going to air on Versus, and I mean, and again, it's amazing that WEC could arguably be the promotion of the year. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, the Versus shows have not, you know, they've dropped in ratings kind of since they've begun. They've been spiked up by Faber. I think this is going to do quite well because Faber being on there. But, you know, I'm actually looking forward. I like watching Benavidez fight. So Benavidez and Fabiano is the one I'm looking most forward to.
Next show and the final show, WEC 53, is coming up on December 16th at the Jobbing.com Arena in Glendale, Arizona. They actually did a contest, believe it or not. Where would fans like to see WEC run an event? And Glendale, Arizona won. And they will, in fact, not only be getting event, they'll be getting the last event, as it is the final show before the official merger. And last week, I mentioned that the merger was effective immediately. And somebody said, well, how is it effective immediately if they're running two more events? Well, the current 145-pound champion, Jose Aldo Jr., is right now the UFC 145-pound champion. He's got a UFC belt. It is pretty much official in all ways, except they are going to be running the final two events, and as noted, they're going to be doing some different unification bouts and that sort of thing. But this one will be headlined by Ben Henderson against Anthony Pettis, Dominic Cruz against Scott Jorgensen, and Donald Cerrone versus Chris Horodesky. And we'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. And UFC is airing this Saturday as well from Germany. So we're going to talk about that event as well. Plus, take your phone calls and emails and a lot more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Hopefully everybody fell back with your clocks and you didn't tune in and find out Actually, let me do this math here. Maybe you would tune in and the show wasn't on and you gave up. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, it is a new day. Days are shorter. And that is leading us into the final events of the year for UFC and WEC. And we were talking about the final ever WEC event coming up on December 16th at the Jobbing Arena with Henderson Pettis, Dominic Cruz, Scott Jorgensen, Donald Cerrone versus Chris Horodesky. And Mike, any thoughts on that particular card? The final one.
That card is actually, you know, again, awesome. When you got Jamie Varner and Shane Roller, you know, set, and obviously that's going to air on TV, but currently on the undercard right now, I think it's, you know, it's going to be a really good show. That Chalarus Palaszewski fight that was supposed to air on the Saber Mizuyaki undercard is going to be on there too. But that's, again, an awesome, I can't wait to see Cruz and Jorgensen. That's going to be all action. And again, you know, Cerrone and Henderson both being on there, it's good stuff. And it's just going to be, again, watch these shows because it's going to be the last time you have a chance to see how good they are. It's also going to be the last time probably you hear Todd Harris, which is going to be very upsetting as well because I think he does a damn good job. But it's, again, it's, it looks like a great show. And it's, again, these guys being added to UFC cards as the year goes on is, it's just really smart and really good stuff, and it's going to pay dividends very, very quickly.
This Saturday from the, I'm not even going to try and say it, but it's from Oberhausen, Germany. It is Marquardt versus Okami. It is UFC 122. It will be airing
on... You didn't want to say the Koenig Pilsner Arena?
I wasn't sure I'd be able to get that out. Although I probably would have done better with that than Oberhausen, to be honest with you. But the show is coming up. It's going to be same day, tape delay. Spike TV, it's a free UFC. And for those of you that are wondering why we've had two free UFCs in the last month or so, why did they have one from London and then about a month later come back with another free one from Germany? I believe they had a potentially really huge fight scheduled for this UFC that ended up falling through, and they'd already scheduled it, and so the show must go on. So, yes, it was not originally scheduled to be headlined by Nate Marquardt and Yushin Okami, but things happen, and so that is what ended up being the main event of the show. Jorge Rivera. A lot of guys, a lot of these individuals pronounce that word differently, but I believe Jorge pronounces it Jorge as opposed to George. George Gurgel pronounces it George. Rivera pronounces it Jorge. Faces Alessio Sakara. Dennis Seaver against Andre Winner. Amir Sadala against Peter Sabata. And Krzysztof Soszynski against Goran Reljic. That is the televised card for the three-hour Spike TV Spectacular. And Mike, your thoughts on that show?
I was wondering what that other fight could be because Rivera and Sakara is a semi-main event. I know they're both on three-fight winning streaks, but to be honest, I still have not gotten over the Sakara-Lightes fight from UFC 101 that I went to in Philadelphia. That was just, I still have not gotten over that. But, you know, Marquardt and Okami, doesn't, you know, set the world on fire. I guess it was supposed to be Vitor Belfort and Okami. I think this is works out a little bit better in Okami's favor, but I'm still taking Marquardt.
Yes, originally it was supposed to be Belfort here facing Okami, with the winner getting a middleweight title shot, but they removed Belfort. They moved him to the Anderson Silva fight, so he's getting a title shot, and this will be supposedly a number one contenders match for the winner of the Silva-Belfort fight. So that is the booking plan, and we'll see how things go. Wanted to mention that also this coming weekend is the Dragon Gate USA Untouchable pay-per-view, which is being called Untouchable since it airs from Chicago, of all places. And the one thing about this show, I'm going to get the negative out of the way first, because this actually was probably the best pay-per-view. In fact, it was definitely the best pay-per-view that they have done since the first Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view. The one negative is they just aired a live internet pay-per-view, and this pay-per-view was taped before that one aired. So basically, if you watched the internet pay-per-view and then you watch this show next weekend, the storylines are all completely out of whack. And in a way, it kind of, I mean, I can figure it out and everything like that, but it was different. We'll just put it that way. But that is the negative on the show. This show was fabulous. A fabulous show. And the worst match on the show, I gave 3.25 stars to. And as noted, that was the worst match on the show. Best match on the show, 4.25 for the main event, which was an awesome match with Shima and Ricochet. Ricochet, everybody, getting his big push here against Naruki Doi and Masato Yoshino. Not only was the match awesome, but Shima cut a 10-star promo when this match was over. I loved every solitary single thing about this main event. Everything else on the show was either good, very good, or great. The opener on the show was Mike Quackenbush, Akira Tozawa, BB Hulk in a three-way. Very good opener. The Shingo Dragon Kid match was excellent. Jimmy Jacobs and Jon Moxley in a street fight was not as good as their I Quit match at the internet pay-per-view, but it was a really good street fight. Rich Swann, Drake Younger, Chuck Taylor, and Johnny Gargano. I gave it 3.25. May have been better than that. It was a four-way. I don't think they call it a fray anymore. I forget what they call it. But it's a four-way match with guys just doing a bunch of crazy moves. And it was really fun. And then, of course, the main event, as noted, Shima, Ricochet, Naruki Doi, Masato Yoshino in a tag match. And I loved it. So everything about this show was great. And if you get a chance to check it out, it's on pay-per-view, traditional pay-per-view. Check your cable company, satellite provider. Check out when it airs. I think it's only like $15. Maybe it's $19.99. Significantly less than the $44 to $54.95 you pay for WWE shows, or even the $44.95 for TNA shows, I believe they're at right now. Maybe even more than that. I can't remember what TNA charges, but it's a lot. But it's like either $15 or $19. It's 3 hours, and it's really, really fun. So if you're a professional wrestling fan, you really should buy this pay-per-view because you're going to have a good time.
You know, I'll use this opportunity to throw in one more thing about Japanese wrestling. Actually, this week, to New Japan's Togi Makabe, who just recently lost the IWGP heavyweight title, was injured in Kyoto on the 3rd in a tag match. The G1 Tag League has been going on right now. And it was he and Hanma against Masato Tanaka and Ishii. And Tanaka, they had a spot outside on the floor where Tanaka set up a table that looked to be a little thick and actually seemed to be rushing into the move, picked Makabe up and brainbustered him on the table. And he came down straight down on his head. His arms went limp and he was stretchered out. And then, you know, obviously he has got some spinal damage, not sure to the level of how bad it is yet. They haven't said it's been too bad, so that might be a good thing of maybe it was just some vicious stingers or something like that. But it looked terrible. The table looked too thick, and the fact that he went through it the way they had it set up, he was slammed down in the middle of the table, and basically the thing could, you know, was going to fold in. It was possible it was going to fold in, which would have bent his back directly over the, you know, the breaking table. It was just a sloppily done move. Then hopefully Makabe is not injured too badly.
Was that a legit injury?
It certainly looked like it was. I mean, the way that he could have played it up more, maybe it was just a stinger, and they're continuing to play it up more, but you can see it on YouTube.
Oh, I've seen it, actually.
Right now, but the way he was driven down, as direct as it was, it looked pretty bad.
I watched it, and it was just, it was weird, because he went for a brainbuster, but he, like, didn't get him all the way up. Like, usually when you do a brainbuster, you get the guy up, you know, like a vertical suplex, and you drop down and you kind of tuck their head in at the end. This was like he didn't get him all the way up, so he, like, legitimately did a brainbuster. And he went through the table, and it was kind of a little bit in slow motion, and it looked bad, but it also looked like, I mean, I just sat there and I watched it and I thought, what were you thinking? I mean, if you weren't trying to do this, like, what were you thinking here? And so I didn't know if it was like a legitimate injury or if they were, it was just something they were playing up for the deal. But I saw it and it certainly did not look good. So, yeah, hopefully he's okay if that was a real injury.
Well, yeah, and hopefully they're playing it up, too. It was just, and again, the angle, I don't know what you thought, the angle that they went through, too, is just like, this was just not a good idea. It was just not a good idea all around, especially for a, you know, on a show that didn't really, you know, you didn't need to have the brainbuster through the table.
Let's go to the phones. You're on Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Forrest from Alabama. What's up?
Forrest, what's happening?
Not too much. Just wanted to say what's up to Mike. You know, I haven't talked to Mike in a long time.
He's here.
Are you going to ask questions about Cam Newton and the greatness that is the Auburn Tigers football team?
I mean, I don't have any questions. I know all about it. So, you know, I just wanted to get in a quick War Eagle. But I wanted to ask you guys, like, I was just thinking about this earlier, and of course, I know everybody's seen the Hogan and Brooke video by now.
Yeah.
But when you combine, like, that weirdness with, like, the weirdness we've seen in the past with Vince McMahon and his daughter, like, what's up with that? It's just bizarre.
Well, this is a really weird business. For those of you that don't know what Forrest here is talking about, there's a video. Hogan is doing some sort of rap deal. I don't even know what the hell he was doing, but he looks at the camera and he flashes his junk, supposedly, and they put a black box over it. And, I mean, later it came out that he actually flashed his underwear. He actually put up an uncensored version of it, or a non censored version, I guess. I mean, it was like they censored anything, but he proved that it was actually his underwear that he was flashing. But his daughter's right there, and it's just, there's a lot of weirdness. I mean, the weird thing to me is not that he fake flashed his junk in front of his daughter. It's more that his daughter looks like exactly like his wife. That to me is the creepy thing, or vice versa, whichever way you want to look at it. So I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot of weird people in wrestling. We'll talk about this a little bit more after the break. I don't know what else to say about it except that it's pro wrestling and weird people get into it. I don't necessarily think that they're doing anything, you know. We'll talk about it after the break. Wrestling Observer Live, everybody. Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, following the greatest segue in the history of this program, as I don't know what I was talking about, but it involved weird people in wrestling and fathers and daughters. I just want to say that I'm not saying that I think anything weird is going on with Hulk and Brooke or Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon, but a caller did ask about that, and he noted that these people are weird, and I agree. These people are weird, but that's all I'm saying about it. You know what I mean, Mike?
I do indeed, and really, as creepy as that may have been for some people to watch, I found it far creepier in the fact that Hulk was actually trying to rap along with the Notorious B.I.G.'s Juicy.
Well, you know, what can you do? Raw on Monday night, the Vince McMahon skit, we talked about that, but there was also a skit involving Pee Wee Herman. What did you think about this?
To be honest, it, you know, for the E being the E, and to be honest, I've seen far worse as far as guest hosts go. I think between the Vince skit and the interaction between The Miz and Riley, because if you actually had seen any of that show, it was good for a cheap laugh and breaking out the music at the end and the Big Show doing the Pee-wee dance and everything. I mean, okay, I can hear Les Thatcher right now screaming at me, how many buys did that sell on the pay-per-view? Okay, good point. But compared to, you know, some of the matches and other stuff they had on, it could have been far, far worse. So I will actually take this, even though it was stupid, it was mindless, it was weak. I will actually take those two comedy segments over a lot of other attempts WWE has tried over since the inception of the guest GM.
The next pay-per-view, of course, is Survivor Series, and it almost wasn't. If you recall, last year, the Survivor Series show, which was built around a three-way, it was John Cena, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels, and it was all comedy in the build-up for this main event, and as a result, that and the fact that it went head-to-head with a UFC pay-per-view that weekend, which actually, I was doing a look at buy rates, and I don't think that UFC pay-per-view actually made any difference in the Survivor Series buy rate. But the buy rate wasn't good, and so they decided they want to drop the Survivor Series name. And then, I guess cooler heads prevailed, and they decided not to drop the Survivor Series name. But we're going to talk a little bit about the Survivor Series card here in just a moment. First off, I want to take a call. You're on Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Alex Lowe, and I'm from Newburgh, Indiana.
Alex, what's up?
Hey, guys. I was wondering what you and Dave's thoughts were on the reasons of Daniel Bryan's recent push and why they stopped bad-mouthing him. Do you think it's because all the injuries that happened and they think they need him more than they used to?
Well, I know from talking to people, as far as Daniel Bryan goes, they did actually see something in him over the last couple of weeks. They gave him the pay-per-view match, and it was very good. And then they had the match on Raw the next night, and it was very good. And I think that that's probably the reason that they signed them to a third match for SmackDown, and that was also very good. And it is a case where there are so many guys hurt that they need guys that can have great matches. And there's also a directive, which I don't know how long this is going to last, but there is a directive that from now on, they're going to try to push guys, push them, like actually push them, in the sense that, you know, as opposed to having Daniel Bryan win one match and then Dolph Ziggler beats him on Raw and then Daniel Bryan wins on SmackDown and then Dolph Ziggler beats him in the next show, Daniel Bryan won every single one of those matches. Now, granted, they may end up doing a unification match and Dolph may end up winning the unification match in the end, but, you know, over the last 2 weeks, the idea has been, we're going to push Daniel Bryan, and we're not messing around. He's going to win all of his matches. So I think they do see something in him now, and obviously there's been a change in that over the last couple of weeks, and it probably is a result of the injury situation and guys going down, but it's just, you know, I thought about this when I first saw those two matches on the pay-per-view and Raw. My thought was, if you guys don't see how good this guy is now, I mean, you never will. And apparently they did. So it's good news for Daniel Bryan fans.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Really appreciate it. What do you think of the Daniel Bryan push so far?
Well, I was actually waiting on Dave to answer there. That's why I didn't want to jump in. But, well, you know, it's kind of like they have this ass-backwards way of, and they've done this with other guys, too, of testing their mettle almost seemingly of, like, we're going to make you a fool, and if you somehow survive that okay, then you're aces in our eyes. And I know that's not exactly the case here, but it is kind of funny that, you know, after he does the dance, he does the backflip into the splits, somebody call his mama, the man is dancing, he's a ladies' woman, or he's a ladies' man, he's got the women. It took that for them to go, okay, now go out there with Ziggler, and we're going to give you some time, and then to do it again on Raw, I mean, it was... I don't know. It's the timing of that is kind of amazing. But what they do in the future with him, you know, who knows? Maybe he goes back down to a low key Evan Bourne type of level. But for right now, I'm absolutely loving it because he's taking advantage of his opportunities by having these great matches. And they've obviously, you know, Ziggler, they've been up and down with anyway, and he just seemed to be spinning wheels. But you need a guy like Daniel Bryan because he makes everybody else look better, and that's why there's always a place for somebody like him. And it's too bad that they can't keep him on a... Hopefully they keep him on a good level and a semi-main event type of level because he can make anybody look good. And when they have guys like your Otungas and your Zeke's and your guys like that who are out there, you know, obviously Daniel Bryan should not be losing to those guys, but, you know, at some point it's going to happen, and you need them to make them look as good as they possibly can to convince you that you want to watch these guys wrestle your Sheamuses and other guys like that. So there's always a place for it, and I'm glad they're actually giving him the opportunity.
You know, the other thing about Daniel Bryan, which is it's a big positive for him, is that he is a guy who is always smiling. And he's always trying to find and make the best of different situations. If you followed Bryan Danielson on the indie scene, I mean, there was a period where he grew a long beard and he wore a wizard's robe. I mean, this is a guy with a sense of humor that likes to have fun. I even hate to use that term because, you know, Michael Cole used that for somebody, I can't remember who it was, and Michelle McCool had, you know, I'm loving life and that sort of thing. But, you know, Daniel Bryan is really a guy that likes to have fun. And there are a lot of guys in WWE, and there are guys that have lost a lot of weight, but you go out there and you tell them, I want you to go out and you're going to do a ladies' man gimmick, and you don't know how to dance, but you're going to dance anyway, and you're probably going to end up looking like a fool, and they will be so sad, and they will carry it around on their face all day, or if they're told they're going to lose a match or a series of matches, you know, you their whole countenance falls, and you can just tell these people are pouting. And these are the guys that are doomed. And when you have a guy like Daniel Bryan, and they're like, we want you to go out there and dance, and you look like an idiot, and we're going to give you this ladies man gimmick, he's fine with that. He'll smile and go, great! And he'll go out there and do what he can to make the best of it. And then you tell him to go out and have a great match, and he'll do that. You go out there and you tell him you're going to lose in 30 seconds to the great Khali. He'll go, all right, go out there and lose his match. And that is a huge benefit for Daniel Bryan to have that attitude. And it's probably going to serve him very well, whereas you've got other guys in WWE that, you know, they hear this stuff and it ruins their month. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Carlito was the perfect example of it. Daniel Bryan is the anti-Carlito. There's a drop for everybody. Let's go to the phones. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Sinbad from Chicago.
Oh, my God. Sinbad, what's up?
not too much. I'm not going to talk about Cody, even though I am upset that him and Drew broke up as a team already. But I do love his mirror jacket, and that's good. So he's going to be a main eventer soon enough. Also, I'm upset.
Hold on. Let me stop you.
What?
Sinbad. Are you really sad that he broke up his team with Drew McIntyre? I mean, really?
Now, Brian, you have to admit, Drew was kind of dragging Cody down a little bit.
Well, that's my point. I mean, if you're a big fan of Cody Rhodes, how can you be sad that his team with Drew McIntyre was busted up?
Let me explain. I know WWE, and I know that they are trying to push Drew McIntyre for some strange reason. So if he is the babyface, then Cody's going to be the one that is going to be counted 1, 2, 3. We both know it. So that sucks. And I'd rather him dragging Drew's long-haired, you know, stupid, horrible wrestling. I don't know. I can't think of another word for him. But he sucks.
The crash and burn that was.
I was fine with Cody carrying him.
Okay, all right. So let's move on now.
All right, what I want to talk about is WrestleMania. I love WrestleMania. It's so awesome every single year. And this year, I read the Observer. It's not looking exciting.
No, it's not.
Like I'm really nervous. You know, because if we get like Jack Swagger in the semi-main, we have some problems.
Well, worse than that, what if you get John Cena against Randy Orton in the main event?
No. That's the big problem. See, I have this evil twin idea where John Cena just gets a fake mustache. And since WWE's PG, they could do this now. You know, he just has a fake mustache, and he could be Ron Cena, his evil brother, and then they could somehow have a match at WrestleMania. I don't know how this is going to work out, but I swear they do it on soap operas all the time, and this is going to be the thing that's going to change wrestling forever.
This
is going down because of this idea.
This is what's going to save WrestleMania this year, huh?
Ron Cena with a mustache.
How about that? All right. Sinbad, I want to thank you very much for the call.
Well, yeah. Well, you never know. It could give Darren Young a possibility to make some money and possibly to appear on a WrestleMania for possibly the only time in his entire life.
He could, in fact, be John Cena's evil twin.
Ron Cena.
Yeah.
Well, they could bring his father back, too. There could be some sort of wackiness that way, too.
I prefer Don Cena.
Don Cena.
Yeah,
they could be a whole bunch of them. You have Ron Cena, Don Cena, yeah, just tons of them. They could be like the Machines used to be. You know, there was Super Machine and Strong, and then there was Piper Machine and Hulk Machine and Coco Machine. You could have all those machines again.
I hate to do this segue, but why don't you tell everybody about Edouard Carpentier?
that wasn't much of a segue at all.
I just wanted to make sure that we talked about it.
You know, we should have Helmy on for this or somebody from Quebec because Edouard Carpentier was a huge, huge star in Quebec. And, you know, he passes away in the House of Commons. They actually had two different members of the House of Commons actually give speeches on him. And it was a very, very big story, but passed away from a heart attack on October 30th. The news didn't get out until a couple days later, but 84 years old. One of the first high-flying kind of guys, and I mean, unlike Antonio Rocca, wasn't just, you know, smacking around with the feet. There was, you know, more than coming off the top rope. Now, You know, some people said he was a, you know, too much of a gymnast. Even Killer Kowalski, who was his biggest career rival and the guy he's probably most known for up in the Northeast, being linked with, said it was, you know, he had to carry him and it was, you know, too pinball-esque. And it's amazing when you look at guys now and you look back at tapes of Carpentier, it's not even the same thing, but the same arguments are made. But he was one of the very few that could do that and, was just an unbelievable athlete. And he's, I guess, what's going to be left as far as his legacy, and there's a lot of it, but probably the biggest thing was the matches he had with Lou Thesz. The NWA had come up with an idea to basically, in that era, you could have two different champions because news wasn't going to travel that fast. People wouldn't know, and frankly, even if they did, a few people did, it wasn't going to make that big of a difference, so they decided to split the title. Thesz was going to go to Japan, and Carpentier won it, but then there were a whole bunch of promotional issues, which are too long to kind of get into right now, but basically, Carpentier ended up leaving the NWA. His promoters left the NWA, and he was looked at in some circles as the champion, and then ended up losing a belt.
Actually, Mike, hold on. We'll get back into this when we come back from the break. I'll let you wrap the story up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, who is going to wrap up the story of the splintered title and Edouard Carpentier.
Yeah, I was getting my history roll on there, but basically, Lou Thesz and Carpentier had a match. They were going to split the titles. Thesz ended up losing to Carpentier via DQ. They had another match a little bit later on. Basically, Carpentier and his promoter pulled out of the NWA, and he ended up going to Omaha, Nebraska, and losing a match to Vern Gagne. That title ended up becoming the AWA title. He went to Los Angeles, and basically what became the WWA title and the famous title that Freddie Blassie had rolled around with, he won that title. And then the Boston title with Killer Kowalski, he dropped the title in those three places and ended up being a, you know, a big deal and kind of really changed the way the wrestling landscape was. He also was an announcer for years in Quebec, and just going to be, he's a legendary figure, and Dave's got an incredible bio up in the Observer right now.
And that is it for the show this week, everybody. I want to thank you very much for listening. Of course, coming up here in just a moment, the TNA Turning Point pay-per-view. Headlined, of course, by Matt Morgan and Jeff Hardy for the TNA title. If you don't end up getting the pay-per-view, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the event. Talk about all of the matches, give you the results, talk about any of the big stories that take place on that show. And then later on tonight, Dave and I are going to be back up with a brand new radio show talking all of the results, the news from the show, backstage notes. We'll preview next week as well and talk about all of the latest news from the weekend. Of course, next week, don't forget, it is WEC Faber versus Mizugaki on Thursday night. And on Saturday night, it is Marquardt Okami, UFC from Oberhausen, Germany, coming up on Saturday night. It is free on Spike TV, 9 o'clock p.m. Make sure you check it out. We'll be talking about it on next Sunday's show as well. If the show never airs in your local area, if it gets preempted, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Live streaming link at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern on the front page of the website every Sunday. So thanks again, everybody. Thanks, Mike, as always. Thanks, all the folks at Sports Byline. We're out of here. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.